This episode of the Doug Guttrussell Family Hour Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Go to Squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first purchase.
Oh, hell no, here he comes again, the Lord of the Flies, straight out of your grandfather's clock. He grew a beard to make himself look more like a man, and he likes to talk about spirituality. Raspy lesbian voice, one ball and ready yap. It's the host of the DTFH, Duncan Trussell.
Hello, my dear, sweet, beautiful friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, the Skrillex of podcasting, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Hare Krishna. Thank you for tuning into this podcast, and a big thanks to those of you who sent me nice messages after I talked about the disgruntled Whole Foods cashier who told my friend and teacher, Raghu Marcus, that he was pissed off because my commercials are too long. A lot of you guys wrote in, gave me some nice Twitter comments saying that you enjoy the commercials and that they make you laugh and that I shouldn't worry about it and I should just keep doing them. Now, I did get a very interesting, or what I consider to be a very interesting comment on the message board over at DuncanTrussell.com. And here's the comment. My main issue with the ad/monologues is that I'm often hesitant to recommend podcasts to certain folks. I feel like a lot of people might be turned off by all the talk of ejaculating honey, anal fisting, etc. I get that Duncan is simply rebelling against his own commercialism, but either have ads or don't. I wish he'd save his amazing penchant for ridiculous descriptions and hyperbole for his act or the podcast itself rather than spewing it out before the guest is even introduced. Okay. Number one, thank you very much for saying that I have an amazing penchant for ridiculous descriptions and hyperbole. I do appreciate that, and it's a very sweet thing for you to say. Two, I do not recall saying ejaculating honey at any time in my life, though I do love that description, and I wish that I had said it more than I have. It's amazing. It reminds me of something that you might hear in a Harlequin romance about someone who has a love affair with a pan. I can imagine some half-human, half-woodland animal just blasting hot, wet globs of sweet primordial honey jizz all over some woodland nymph as she gasped in the dark bowers of a fantasy forest, perhaps on some other planet after having thousands of orgasms in a row. That's a beautiful description. Ejaculating honey, it's wonderful. Now, as far as your friends who are going to be turned off by talks of ejaculating honey and talking about ejaculating honey and anal fisting, who are your friends that they would be offended by that? That's a curious thing, isn't it? That people would be offended by talking about anal fisting or ejaculating honey. Offense is a really curious thing when you consider that we're all getting exploded out of a vagina into infinity. Essentially, we're temporal skydivers plunging minus a parachute in the direction of nothingness, a great singularity from which you can never return, that incredible, impassable wall of doom that all human beings living on this planet will one day have to pass through. And as we go plunging in the direction of that pure state of absolute nothingness, that we can experience feelings of being offended by the profane is amazing. Clusters and groups of people all holding on to each other and abiding by strange codes of ethics, especially sexual codes of ethics, really seemed absurd to me for a really long time. Certain aspects of sexual ethics I totally get. Obviously, the ones that we have laws about mostly makes sense to me. But the other kind of ethics, the idea that there's considered to be vanilla and kinky sex, that there's certain groups of people who think that they're having sex in the right way, wow, that really is hilarious. There are white bread crackers out there. There are these conservative Christian fundamentalist freaks out there who feel like the inserting your fingers into a lover's asshole or burying your face deep, deep, deep in your lover's vagina and just lapping and licking all that sweet, delicious honey from the inner folds of that, just the woman that you love, that this is wrong. There are people who believe that that's wrong, and it's shocking. You know, the missionary position, of course, being the term for just laying on the way missionaries humped. You just lay on top of somebody, and that's it, man. Then you go to bed. It's sad. It's sad to me. When here we have sex, if you're essentially a completely safe thing, if you're careful and you've been tested, et cetera, et cetera. There's ways to, you know, it can obviously be incredibly dangerous, but here is this beautiful theater. That's what sex is. The bed is a stage, and sex can be this incredible, ridiculous, dramatic, magical, cosmic unification with another human being, where for a brief temporary time you can ascend to the celestial realms and experience high states of vibratory bliss known as orgasm, and that there's so many vehicles and paths to reach that incredible heightened state, and some of those paths involve anal fisting and butt plugs and ejaculating honey and ball gags and handcuffs and whips and great music and incense and gongs. You can go any direction you want when you're having sex with somebody. And it's a very powerful, magical, beautiful, incredible experience. And it seems so strange to me that it's something that has become marginalized, off limits, and considered profane by people who believe that there is a right way for human beings to insert blood-engorged tentacles into the self-lubricated orifices of those they love. It's shocking to me. You think you know the right way to do this? Like the creator of the universe was like, all right, here's the only way to deal with the most sensitive part of your body, and the way to do that is you let a man you're married to place his erect penis inside of you and move it back and forth for a certain number of thrusts until he reaches orgasm. And if you haven't come by then, I'm sorry, lady, you're fucked. Literally and figuratively. Which is why in the old days, I don't know if you knew about this, but doctors used to actually have to administer orgasms to women. Because it was the female orgasm, or the idea that women could come, theoretically, apparently, from my brief reading on the internet, people weren't even sure about that. You know, guys were so self-absorbed, and maybe just because of a inaccessibility of water, or maybe because people weren't taking enough showers or something, everyone just smelled like a six-day-old ham that somebody left in a cooler at the beach or something. And so the idea of oral sex in its own was just gross, because it was like putting your face inside an old meat cooler. But I don't know for sure. Maybe people smelled great back then. I have no idea. My theory is everybody was swarming with fleas, and their pussies and cocks were just dripping with scabs and thick, phlegmy, mucusy stuff that was oozing off of everyone's undergirders back in those days, and that was just the way it was. But maybe not. You know, personally, that wouldn't have stopped me from going down on my girlfriend back then. So I don't know. Anyway, that's all I'm saying is your friends need to learn that they must not be afraid of these ridiculous descriptions, as you say, and that if they have become caught in a modality where the term ejaculating honey and anal fisting turns them off, then you must help them. You must pull them from that mind state. You must pull the mask away from their face and help them understand that we exist in a Garden of Eden universe where everything around us is just a part of the eternal love force that all things emerge from, and that it is our closed offness, it is our fear, it is our shutting downness, it is our it's our resistance that is keeping us from recognizing that everything around us is contact with the divine, and that includes anal fisting. So I hope your friends will I hope you'll get your friends to listen to this podcast, even though I am vulgar and I am profane, and even though I do go on these ridiculous sexually laced rants from time to time, please understand that there is no malice behind any of it. And also, there is not the desire to shock. There's not that aggressive thing where it's like, I'm going to really say something fucked up today, kids. It's just a general joy I feel when I talk about butt plugs and fisting and the way the words sound funny. And it's fun to use those words as a kind of spice that I can dump on top of the spiritual stuff that I say, which honestly makes me feel very vulnerable when I talk about it. It makes me feel embarrassed a lot of the times when I start talking about God or the concepts that I'm learning from teachers like Ram Dass and Raghu Marcus and Chogyam Trungpa and Jack Kornfield. I feel embarrassed, you know? Like, I want to be a comedian, right? I want to talk about comedy stuff. But then there's another part of me that has been so moved by a lot of the teachings that I've encountered from the Ram Dass satsang that it's all I think about. I think about it all the time, and it has like created these real profound changes in the way that I interact with my world for the better. You know, without that stuff, I don't know what I'd be like. I think I'd be all shut down and hunched over and angry and hissing at the world like a badger in the corner of some rescue clinic somewhere. Just some angry, wet, hissing animal, scared, terrified, lonely, and entitled. I have that propensity inside of me. And if not for a lot of these, like, teachings that I've gotten, then I don't know what I'd be like. So it's fun to talk about them. I love talking about them. It's just, but it's embarrassing, you know? So maybe part of what I do is just try to throw in these ridiculously profane things that I still kind of feel cool while I'm doing it. So I don't have to feel completely sappy and drivelly and what's the word? Sanctimonious. I'm not sure what all those, there's a lot of great words for, you know? And I don't want to feel like that, though sometimes I am, which is okay. You know, sometimes I am. And it's okay to be like that. By the way, one of my favorite, I guess you'd call him a preacher, is the Reverend Michael Beckwith from Agape. And one of the things he says is that you got to get ready to be embarrassed if you're going to get on the spiritual path. Like, feeling embarrassed is good. It's a good sign. It's like when you're working out and you get out and you become breathless and tired. That's a good sign. You want to feel like that because it means that you're working out really hard. Well, in the same way, if you start getting into your heart chakra and playing around with a lot of the ideas that come from folks like Ram Dass, which is that this entire universe that we exist in is trying to love you and is something that you can love, not just people, but the universe itself, that every single thing around you and every single moment in time is an opportunity for you to tune the metaphysical dial of your consciousness to a station where you are engaged in a never-ending cosmic lovemaking session with eternity. And that's real. And when you start realizing that that's real, it gets fucking weird, but exciting. And you want to talk about it. And so that's why I talk about it. But that's also why I speckle my rants with butt plugs. And maybe one day I won't. But fuck it. That's what I like to do. So that's what I'm gonna do. Today's guest on this podcast is a favorite guest on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. He has got an amazing podcast called You Made It Weird. And if you're in Boulder, Portland, hold on, let me look. This is incredibly unprofessional. I should have had it pulled up. If you're in Boulder, Portland, Salt Lake City, or Seattle, you can go see him live with Rob Bell. You can get all the info at PeteHolmes.com. Okay, everybody, let's do it! Pete Holmes! Pete Holmes, welcome back. It's been too long, man.
I know. It is that thing where I asked to do this because it guarantees a hang. We're bad. I'm bad. Maybe it's me.
I'm bad.
It could be us together. But we had that really lovely meal. I think about it all the time. You know, we were talking about Alex Gray earlier, and he used the term on the natch.
Yes.
Things that can make you feel like you're tripping on the natch.
Yes.
Just a funny way of saying naturally.
Yeah.
And when we had that, this is going to sound romantic, but it's not like romantic. It was romantic in the sense that if you wrote a piece about it, it would feel romantic, but it wasn't like traditionally romance, obviously.
Yeah.
But the way I'm going to talk about it was going to sound romantic. We went to a French restaurant right away.
Yes.
Kind of seems like a date. And we sat in this corner booth. It was very, like, mellow.
Yeah.
And the sun was going down. It was early. And we had, like, two glasses of white wine apiece.
Yeah.
And, like, a little appetizer. And the sun was going down in such a way. This is the French place on Hillhurst?
Yeah.
No, Vermont.
Vermont.
That the light was coming in, right? So it was shining in the restaurant. Perfect.
Yeah.
And like, it's those things where you have those, like, little Carl Sagan-y moments where you see dust in the sunlight.
Yes.
And you're like, that's us floating in the cosmos,
yeah,
man. And we were talking about mushrooms, and we were talking about dreams, and we were talking about transcendence and
yes,
presence. And we were doing it at the same time. That feeling that you get when you're on mushrooms where you're like, this is novel, meaning not new, but like it's a book.
Yeah.
Like this should be novelized. And you were sitting there and like it was kind of a mushroomy thing. Again, this is the part that would sound sexual, but like you looked cool. You were like leaning back and were drinking wine
yeah,
in the way that like when you're tripping with a friend, you're kind of like, you look amazing. And like I left and I was like, oh my God, I'm there on the natch.
Yeah,
like,
man.
I had some white wine, but... full disclosure, we had both had some white wine.
What?
But I walked home, and that one of those things, I'm so excited to talk to you, so I'm chatty, forgive me, but one of those things that the mystics talk about is like every step of the journey is the only step, and it contains all the steps.
Yeah.
But we get so caught up in like, I'll be happy when I get home sort of thing. Like when I get home, that's when I'll feel.
Right.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
But like that walk home, I was there every step and I was seeing the light and
yeah,
seeing what light is and all the information that's in it. This sounds very trippy, but you gave me alpha brain and maybe it worked.
Oh, good.
But that was the last time I saw you, man.
Yeah, that was a while ago. It's so easy to get swept away by time and drift away from people with
yeah,
just for no reason at all, man.
And no reason at all, absolutely. And you were saying that people were excited. I'm excited to talk to you. I'm always excited to talk to you. And it's funny that the things that are important to you, in fact, I would say that that's a mystical teaching right there. It's the things that we know that are good for us. We know what they are.
Yeah.
Friendship. Connection.
Yes.
Community.
Yeah.
Engaging discussion. Learning. Growing, evolving. These
yes,
are all good things. Or just basic things. Go for a fucking walk.
Mm-hmm.
Get in the ocean. Sit in the park. All these things that we know are good for us. The thing that's like such a conundrum, seeing your friend Duncan.
Yeah.
It's the will. Finding the will to do them. Because you know what you should do, and you have to kind of parent yourself.
Yeah.
Like my girlfriend's out of town for 2 weeks, and I was like, I'm going to do this experiment where I'm going to live monastically. I'm going to live like a monk. Because the only thing that she stops me from doing... you know, when she's there is like, it's hard to get out of bed because she's a beautiful warm body and you want
yes,
to sleep. So I'm like, I'm going to get up early and I'm going to see the sunrise.
Oh.
I'm going to read books. And I still plan on doing this, but like, it's hard to find the will.
Yeah.
You know, I know that would be great. Right.
Well, that's the kind of funny, I think that's one of the great and incredible tricks the mind plays on you is that it's always creating these conditions within which you will achieve a mystical state. That's because it can't understand the idea that all the mystics say, which is that, well, actually, you already are a perfect thing.
It doesn't know what to do with
you
that.
You already are completely outside of time.
Right.
You already are something that is everything that you're doing couldn't be more perfect.
Right.
And your mind can't deal with that because, you know, like, have you ever forgiven somebody who really fucked you over?
Sure.
And if you've forgiven someone who's cool, who's really fucked you over, sometimes they'll go, I don't deserve this. And because you're doing it for real, like no malice, no passive aggression, you've actually pulled off that incredible feat of truly forgiving them, you go, nobody deserves it because we don't deserve any of this. We don't deserve, but that, so that I don't deserve this. I think that's what the mind's light feels like all the time. It's like, there is no fucking way that if I just relax for a second, I actually deserve this onslaught of bliss that seems to come pouring out of nowhere when I'm still, because I'm so awful.
Right.
I don't deserve that.
I think there's a staggering amount of self-hate and crippling rage and fear and all that sort of stuff that's constantly in all of us. And I seem like a very chipper guy, but I feel it too. You know, you have too much to drink and you take a leak at 4 a.m. and you're just like, oh no, I want this to end. Like this whole experience.
Yes.
I can't handle it.
Yep.
Like weird, I guess we'd classify that as a suicidal thought, but it doesn't feel suicidal. You're not going to do it, but you're just like, fuck everything.
Yeah.
It's more despair.
Yeah.
I would classify it as a despair thought. But that's why I'm big into self-love and trying to coax your brain into allowing those really transcendent, wonderful, peaceful, grace-filled experiences.
Yeah.
But we want guaranteed experiences.
Yeah.
This is the big thing. I wanted to come on the show. Obviously, I'm going on tour with Rob Bell, who's this amazing, I would call him a mystic. He's a wonderful, he was a pastor. He's an author. He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's real Christ consciousness kind of guy.
Cool.
You would love him. I'm surprised you haven't had him on, actually. And one of the things that like we're talking about on this tour is like, at least from my perspective, when I talk about it, is like we want guaranteed experiences. Your brain loves guaranteed experiences.
Yeah.
That's why we keep going back to jerking off is a guaranteed experience.
Guaranteed.
Pornography is a guaranteed experience.
Yeah.
Alcohol, coffee, fucking all these things. Well, fucking can go either way.
Yeah. It's guaranteed to be weird. No way for fucking to not be weird. It's guaranteed to be weird.
That's true. But or like chocolate, like any of these things that we put into our bodies, very basic things. We go like, I take this and it goes in and I feel this way. I watch the Avengers and I watch the Avengers. I do all of these things.
Yeah.
I watch the Avengers and I kind of feel cool, like the world's a little bit brighter.
Yes.
Like more marvelous. But then the things that are truly, really fascinating, where the real juice is, aren't guaranteed.
Right.
You'll meditate 12 times this week, and maybe 10 of those, nothing quote-unquote great is going to happen. Or maybe you'll just be overwhelmed with, like, this is a waste of time. What am I doing? Here's one. I'm really firing.
Yeah, please.
I blame the pills.
Fire.
I was taking a walk with my dog, and I was having a really wonderful, like, look. You know when the world just kind of looks like a train set?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You're like, I'm inside of a train
set. It's incredible.
And it completely naturally, and I'm just walking, and I'm like, this is it, man. This is the only moment. Claim your bliss in this moment. Stop thinking about when the walk is over. Stop postponing your happiness to after my dog shits.
Yeah.
And after I get home and take these shoes off, or whatever it is. Be happy right here, right?
Yes.
And then I pass, there's this bar on one of the streets, and there's this show going on, like showgirls and stuff. And I looked in the window, and I just, right when I turned my head, there was a woman changing. Like, not part of the show. Just, like, above the venue.
Wow.
A woman with beautiful breasts changing.
Yes.
Kind of an older woman, if it gives you any, if it makes it less creepy.
Even better.
I loved it. But the thing that was so interesting to me was it completely snapped me out of my transcendent
moment.
Oh, no. It, not in a bad way, necessarily. But I think it's so funny that we're striving for these next level third way of thinking, third eye thinking things, and then you see a pair of tits and you're like, I want tits and I want hamburgers.
You yeah. know what I mean?
Like your body will betray you.
So here's this an interesting thing you're doing here, which is that you, and this is the function of the ego. So the ego wants to do the same thing that politicians, the ego wants to do to the self what the politicians want to do to the earth, which is they want to create these false boundaries that and guard them. And even though these boundaries don't exist at all, they're imaginary boundaries. There's no United States. There's no Canada. There's no country. Yeah. It's just one planet filled with people.
Right.
And it's not even called Earth. It's someone a long time ago decided to call it Earth or Gaia.
Right.
It has no name. It's just this phenomena that is growing people out of it that exists inside of infinity, and you're one piece of that. And so the ego is saying, so here is the sacred and here is the profane.
Right.
Here is the train set and here is not the train set. When they're really...
Go ahead. No, please.
Well,
because I know what you're saying, but maybe...
You know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
So it's sort of like what this creates is this fantastic game with the self. You get to play this game with yourself where you have created a kind of electrical fence between what is sacred and transcendent and what isn't sacred and transcendent.
When really it all is sacred and transcendent.
And your ego can't handle that.
It can't handle it.
It's death. Because your ego doesn't want to die. Its whole function is to stay alive.
Yep.
So the moment it's like, you know, I was listening to this great Ram Dass lecture. There's a great Audible Ram Dass. It's a series of his lectures. It's called, man, that guy was the king of this kind of articulation.
Yeah.
He's so good at it, but it's called Experiments in Truth.
Neither of us are going to.
I'll give it to you. It's called Experiments in Truth. It's on Audible, but so it's all these great lectures, and he talks about how it goes from being as you work on yourself, you get these inevitable moments of synchronicity. It just seems to go along with the territory where if you're meditating, even if you're not meditating, because meditation is just another thing, but if you're just, your intention has shifted to awakening, then what begins to happen is some unbelievable synchronicities that seem to be like you're watching the robes of God for 1 second move in front of you. And it's just that God is wearing time and space, and you're seeing this perfect, impossible synchronicity happen. And it's, you always have that moment of like, holy shit. But because it's the ultimate creative force and apparently the source of all love, there's a polite quality to it where it's not, it's almost funny the way it's doing it. It's almost like a parent playing with a baby, a wink perhaps. But you see those moments and you go, holy shit. This stuff is working.
Mm.
And then you forget about it because it's too much to handle. And then it happens again. Well, Ram Dass was saying those holy shit moments stop happening every once in a while because of certain events and start happening constantly, where you realize that this entire thing that we're in is a synchronicity of such impossible proportions that it's undigestible by our egoic minds.
I hear that. A lot of things. We'll get back to the boobies. I was just watching, it was the Whitey Bulger documentary. You know, Whitey Bulger?
Yes.
Okay, so the crime guy. Somebody was saying something tragic, and somebody was murdered, but somebody didn't go that day, and maybe they would have been murdered that day. And then she goes, like, in this very kind of, like, I have a lot of sympathy to that person, but my skin does crawl a little bit when people say things like, I guess everything happens for a reason.
Mm.
I'm like, okay, sure, oh, fine. But we throw that around too often.
Yeah.
What you're talking about, what you're bringing into it, and what I think maybe Ram Dass is bringing into it, is when we're letting go and going into the flow, going into where we're supposed to be, and not necessarily being in a place of meditating, meaning sitting still and quieting your mind, but constantly praying or constantly meditating and being in that place where you're in the flow or whatever, you start seeing more and more of those synchronicities. But I think there are things that disrupt the flow and can disconnect you from those sorts of things. And you can have a thing where you're like, no, that didn't really happen for a reason other than my detachment from my purpose.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Well, no. Yes, I know what you're saying, and it's a fair argument, but the it's kind of like, Okay, so you take a nice dose of mushrooms, right? Let's say you're smart and you actually maybe take some mushrooms with some MDMA or something, and you combine these two chemicals, which have an amazing synergy together. And so in that state of consciousness, which so many people have entered, you suddenly become everything, which is one of the classic psychedelic moments, or your identity for a second melts away and you remember, you have this respite from this amnesic state we call human existence, and you become what you truly are. You enter into the Bardo that happens when you die, they say. And mm-hmm. like, instead of it being an awful place, it's just the most incredible. It's like going to Hawaii when you've been in Syria for your entire life.
It's funny, I'm reading about the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and they're talking about how all of life is kind of this practice so that when you die, you don't panic.
Yeah.
You're supposed to get into a place where you can get into that, what you just called it, and be like, I'm okay with this, as opposed to freaking out and coming back to
Right, because everyone's freaking out, you know? So, yeah. And right now we're freaking out, and that's the whole thing, is like we're freaking out. We're still dying from whatever. We're in this kind of eternal death process, and we know that there's the potential for resurrection, so we're sort of like in this weird womb of time, and we know that death is actually birth. It's very weird and paradoxical, but so that's what we are. That's the concept, right? That's what we are. Everything is God. You are God. I am God. This is one eternal moment of pure bliss and love, but we're in some kind of crucible within which we're being crystallized and dissolved and crystallized and then dissolved. Eternally.
Well, that's something I've been talking about lately too, which is that the Buddha wanted out. Everybody thought it was very noble that Buddha wanted to reach nirvana and become enlightened.
Yeah.
But his intention, the reason he left his family and decided to go on the spiritual quest and all this stuff, was to stop the endless cycle of death and rebirth. He wanted out. He was like, I've been reborn a billion times. And I got to get the fuck out of here because I'm done.
Yeah, that's right. He was, that's exactly right.
No, I don't think people talk about, I didn't know that about that story. So you're crystallizing and being dissolved and crystallizing and being dissolved and until maybe one of these times around we go like, I think I'm going to let the sun shine in the French restaurant and I'm going to walk home and every step's going to be the real one.
Yeah, and the boobs come and the boobs are great and the boobs aren't there.
I want to be very clear about the boobs because I just had therapy and we were talking about sexuality and we're talking about growing up with a puritanical disdain and judgment of sexuality, and I really have eclipsed that. I really have. So when I saw the wonderful boobies, I didn't go like, oh, what an unspiritual thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't even feel like a creep. I know people listening, I didn't leer or whatever you need me to say so you won't judge me. It was just an organic moment where I turned, saw some breasts, and then continued to walk with my dog.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. The reason I brought it up was it did bring me into my body in a different way.
Yeah.
You can say that that too is spiritual. I'm with you. Everything belongs. Me being a fuck thing is part of all of this. But that wasn't the moment I was going for. I was going for, let's forget my body, let's forget time, let's forget desire.
Yeah.
And there's tits, and I went, all I want is my face between them. You know what I mean? And that doesn't necessarily feel like traditional, a mystical moment.
No, it doesn't, but it is.
Well, yeah, that's a guaranteed experience. For sure.
Yeah, but it's like the funny thing about the guaranteed experiences that you're talking about, and it's a great topic, man. And the funny thing about those guaranteed... So it's like this. It's like, imagine this crazy... I don't know. I'm going to just because it's like hippie and weird, I'm going to say, imagine a geodesic dome, right? And it's a geodesic dome inside of paradise, right? So all around, like, you know, they talk about like the great light or God, you could, whatever your version of God is, imagine that in the presence of that incredible force, whatever you want to call it, if you're an atheist, then you're in the presence of the great harmony that all life springs from. If you're, you know what I mean? Whatever you want to call it. Geodesic dome, you're sitting in this geodesic dome, right? And here you are surrounded by the glory of God. So you start creating tiny little windows in the dome, right? And this window represents meditation. This window represents prayer. This window represents when you get a job that you didn't think you were going to get. And this window represents when you find a new lover. And this window represents, and we're talking about all the guaranteed experiences, or just pinholes through which the divine can, you give the divine permission to shine into your life.
Yeah.
When the reality is, if you wanted to, you could put, you could make the dome completely clear,
right,
and you would see that in every single component of the phenomena of the world is the identical light of the Supreme. It's just that that is so overwhelming that we only allow these certain moments where it can shine through.
Right. Which brings me, another form of tits for me is sleeping. Like, I'm having a very, very great day, like very present, peaceful. You know what I mean? Presence, peaceful, nothing in the moment is lacking. So when I'm in the moment, I feel completely great, and I feel great today.
Yeah.
But then also, I noticed, I was like, I slept in this morning. You know what I mean? Like, I got enough rest.
Yes.
Like, it's interesting. The point I was trying to make with the tits is more that, like, if you sleep deprive me, I'm not going to be as interested in talking about the dome.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or if I'm hungry, or if I'm grumpy, or if I'm heartbroken. These human things, these body things, and I don't have disdain for the body, but it can kind of impede what feels like progress to me sometimes.
Oh,
I'm
like,
I want to be there all the time going, I am crystallized, I will dissolve. You know what I mean? I want to be right there, right where we are right now. I always want to be here. And then you wake me up in the middle of the night and I can't be there. Like, it's
no
fragile.
Way. It's fragile for sure. And that, but again, that's part of the, you know, that's what they say is part of the practice. Part of the so it's like, okay, it's, yeah, you get the heightened states, great conversations, hanging out with the satsang. Like when I go to these Ram Dass retreats and you get to be around certain people who've practiced their entire lives and you feel like you're in front of some kind of mystical steam vent. They're just, you know, they you will literally get incredibly high just from touching some of them, just because of the vibe that they're putting out is so intense that it, like, it gets you baked. And there's all these you get baked. It's crazy, man. And it's
well, I'm with you. I just told you that hanging out, conversations,
it's the satsang. It's the satsang. You know the term satsang?
No.
So that's the term for the spiritual community. It's the it's the sum total of all humans on earth who have as their primary intention the desire to wake up. That's the satsang. And so that can be any religion, any philosophy, and you know when you're around it, because when you're around it, these conversations tend to happen.
Right.
Because you're exchanging information like travelers on the road. Here's what I figured out. What have you got? It's cool.
That would have been a good name for this podcast. Travelers on the road.
We'll call it. But that's the satsang, right?
Yeah.
And so some of the people who are in the satsang, because what are we doing here, man? Like, really what we're doing is, I mean, there's one thing you can do. You can decide who are you going to serve in this dimension that we currently exist in, because everything seems to be about service, doesn't it? It's Skype. Everything seems to be about service, right? Service. We serve each other. I serve you. You serve me. I serve my dog. You serve your girlfriend. Mm-hmm. It's all about service. The service industry. Everything's about service. Get a job. That's a form of service. Everything's about service. Built into the way our society, human society, undulates, the tidal flow of human society seems to have as its core element some form of servants, because you serve a baby when it's born. So built into our ability to continue the humans. Okay, service. Mm-hmm. Service is everything. So the question is, who's your fucking boss, man?
I'm currently rewatching The Master. Who's your master?
Who is your master?
Right.
Is your master the earth? Because if your master is the earth, then that means that you serve matter. So, because you're serving, I'm not talking about the life energy of the earth, but I'm saying the material, the Hare Krishnas call them. They have a great name for them too. God damn it, for the materialists. It's a Hindu name for materialists. But so if you're going to serve the earth, then what you are going to do is try to be very powerful. You're going to try to get a ton of money. You're going to wear like fancy shit, and you're going to get off on all of your successes. And you're going to exist in that place. And underneath it all, you're going to feel very scared. You're going to feel very lonely. You're going to feel very empty because you're eating fruit that is made of plastic and pretending that it's
right.
You're not getting your calories,
right?
So that's serving the earth. Then there's this other concept, which is this idea that all the mystics talk about, which is that we are surrounded by a infinite field of love that loves us no matter what, does not see any flaws in us at all, considers anything that we do to be perfect, is the force that has as its the physical representation of the force is anything that heals. It's that energy that causes a cut to perfectly fuse together. It's in our bodies. It's in us. This is the other thing that you can serve. It's the transcendent love vibration of all things. It's what Jesus talked about.
Yeah, he said nobody can serve both God and money.
That's it. Yep. And yeah, all right, yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
If you need any biblical references, I'm here.
It's the best. But when you decide, shit, that's what I'm going to say. You know what? I'm not going to fucking serve the goddamn, I'm not going to serve the earth, because the earth is like a soap opera writer, and every single script that the earth is going to write for me is going to play out like Days of Our Fucking Lives. It's going to be filled with drama and craziness and good and bad and getting revenge and, you know, like just all the fucking shit you do when you're serving the earth. If you serve that master, that's what the master will demand. The master will demand that you get revenge. The master will demand that you get your, that you fucking are the goddamn king of your fucking castle, baby. You gotta be right, motherfucker, and you gotta stick up for yourself. Stick up for yourself and let them know if they fuck you over, right? That's the earth. That's the master of the earth that you serve. The other master is like,
Can I say?
Yes. Sorry for going on.
No, please. This is the best rant ever. Don't stop the rant. I just want to say that for me, it all comes down to like car stuff. For some reason, like honking at other people has always been like deeply offensive to me.
Yes.
Because there is that moment that you have. I remember I had this terrible. She was all right, but I call her my terrible girlfriend. She was kind of a bit much. So we're in the car, and somebody was taking a long time to park. And she leaned over and honked my horn for me, which I used to say on stage must be what it feels like to have Tourette's when someone else is like making you expletive something. And I said to her, it just kind of came out in this moment of panic. I said, "Don't honk. That's my mom." You know what I mean? It wasn't my mom, but it was just like, I've been in the car with the old lady when I was like 7 years old.
Yeah.
Who's backing out of a spot too long. Don't fucking honk. But that's not my mom. That's me. That's one of those moments where you're honking at yourself.
Yes.
You're letting yourself merge in front of you.
Yeah.
It becomes a joke.
Yeah.
You become, as you said earlier, the thing winking.
Yeah.
You're the one that's kind of like getting the playful joke of it all.
That's it.
Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah. But that's it. That is, in fact, what you just said is the perfect summation of it.
Yeah.
That's being a servant of that master.
Yeah.
It's because that master, for whatever reason, loves to do these winks. And that's why when you come into contact with someone who's like made the decision to do this and has been doing it for long enough, when you're in their presence, all these weird coincidences just seem to accidentally happen all the time.
Yeah.
And so when they talk about like, and you know, all you atheists out there get mad when I talk about Jesus. I don't know. If there are, I can't believe you even listen to my podcast. Really, it's weird. But like when they talk about Jesus doing the miracles, it's like, I don't think he was doing the miracles. I think the miracles were just kind of happening around him the way rain happens around a cloud. It was just like, I don't think he was really like, I'm going to do this shit. It's just because where
he wasn't Ryu charging up the fireball. Like, wait till they see this fireball.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. He was in the flow. He was awake. He was... it's interesting. Whenever you say the perfect being sees us and loves whatever we're doing, it reminds me of what I've been thinking about lately about the word sin. And I hate the word sin. I really do, because my whole life it's been one of those controlling. It's like a barking collar for me. Like, I wanted to do something and it would buzz and make me feel guilt and shame and all these things that have nothing to do with God. Guilt, shame, fear, ugliness, like despair.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like the right stuff. But separation. You know what I mean? Things that are causing separation between you and the source.
Yeah.
You and the juice. You and the real
shit. The nipple.
Shit. The nipple. Yeah. You're moving away from... Like, pornography, I grew up being like, don't look at pornography because it's a sin. Okay, fine. Now I'm like, you probably shouldn't look at too much pornography. Granted, I look at it occasionally.
Yeah.
But you probably shouldn't, because it can disconnect you.
Yeah.
We're learning that. There are more and more young people coming out that are swearing off pornography, not for ethical or moral reasons, but because they can't get a fucking boner when they're with their girlfriends.
Yeah.
I talk about this on stage. They're like, where's the goat? You take your bra off. It's not enough.
Yeah.
That's disconnection.
Yeah.
You're robbing yourself of pure, good, not American, but good, real fucking.
Yeah.
Real connection, real unity. So when I talk about sin, whether it's murdering people or stealing or whatever, it to me, it's also just the things that are like stopping you from the source, that's homogenizing and pasteurizing and flavoring and adding sugar to the milk that just should come right from the teat.
When's the last time you smoked DMT?
Never!
Well,
how we do it. Three big hits, right, Duncan?
I
thought last time we talked, you said you tried and you got two hits in, and I'm not putting you down, but you said you couldn't do it.
Yes, that was a while ago. You know, like, I'm not saying, here's the thing, man, with DMT.
You have now?
Yeah, and you know, a while ago. And by the way, whenever I talk about any kind of illicit drug on this podcast, I'm playing the character of somebody who does that stuff. I do not do it. I don't condone it. Many of you have been hearing this stuff. It should be prescribed by doctors, and so that's what I'm saying. But
what legal ramifications are you afraid of?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But I don't want to, like, my. Here's the thing.
The character Duncan Trussell did
in a script I'm writing about this
druggie,
he did DMT. And so here's what, he did it a few times, right? And so, not a lot, but enough to get a little taste of it. And so he did it.
Three big hits?
Yeah, he did it once. I heard all this stuff about respecting it. Dimethyltryptamine is takes you into the realm of the dead. It's what you experience when you die. It's what you experience in
when
the
you're
womb.
Born.
There's certain you need to do it responsibly. But he came home drunk and was like, you know what? Fuck all this goddamn supernatural nonsense. And he felt really evil. He's like, you know what? This is a bunch of bullshit respecting this crap and saying prayers before it and all this. What happens if I just put the chemical into my bloodstream right now in this fallen state of being hammered and kind of angry and doing everything wrong?
This is a nightmare.
So he tried it, and the message that immediately came to him was, when are you going to realize that we love you no matter what? You think this is bad? You think you're a criminal? You think you're evil?
Yeah.
You think this is so wrong? This is all you.
It's funny. That reminds me of Glengarry Glen Ross. There's this great moment where Ricky Roma, played by Al Pacino, goes, you think you're queer? We're all queer.
Yeah!
And he goes, you fuck little girls? So be it. You cheat on your wife? Live with it. It's this sort of we're drawn to those things. He kind of comes off almost like a sinister character, but then there's also this version where they're just like, what are you talking about? There is no sin. There is no barking collar on you. There's separation and there's togetherness.
There's
unity and there's disunity.
Bingo.
Right?
And so think of your, now, speaking of barking collars, that's exactly it, man. And speaking of barking collars, the best way to understand this is through your dog. So you have no doubt trained your dog to be housebroken, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now what does your dog do when he shits in the house?
Well, he's never shit in the house, but he pees in the house.
And how does he act when you catch him?
He's bad, yeah. He knows he's done something
wrong. He acts like he has done the worst thing possible. Because he has. Because that's pretty much his limit there, outside of chewing up some of your stuff. The worst thing the dog can do is pee in the house.
Right.
When my dog pees in the house, if I catch him, his tail goes between his legs, and he's slowly, slowly looking at me as though I might throw him into the wall. I've never done that, never abused him. He looks at me with the look of Judas at the Last Supper and goes into his pen and stares out at me with the saddest, saddest eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
All I'm thinking is, my friend, I'm going to clean up this piss, brother. Just don't do it again.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah.
I love you.
Right.
So the Hare Krishnas, you'll notice that they wear these really tight choker things made of tulsi, which is the sacred plant in India. And I've heard that they wear these, and they say, we wear these because these are our collars, because we are Krishna's dogs. And I remember the first time I heard that, it sounded very kinky, like S&M-ish. And that was before I had a dog. And now I understand, oh, I get it. You're the dogs of
right
God, because God, what is There is nothing that I can think of offhand outside of kittens and basic cute animals that is more easily forgiven than a dog.
Right.
And that's the idea. The idea is that we are...
I also think it's interesting. On my podcast, we always... It comes up. I forget who said it first, but we always talk about how trying to understand God is like a dog trying to understand the internet. So there's something kind of about that there, that you're doing your best. I see my dog doing my best, doing his best to try and understand me. I talk to him like he understands, like, well, walk. And I'll go, no, stay next to me. He doesn't know what that means. That's not a train. Like, I haven't trained him to, but I talk to him that way anyway. And he's trying to understand. And then he sees, you know, shit on the ground, which is his tits.
That's it.
So he gets distracted or whatever. But you're right. That is a nice way to think of it, is that the idea of sin is one of the things I think turns most people off about religion, is we don't want another series of rules and stuff. It starts to feel kind of like a cult or whatever. It's like, do this, don't do this, we don't do this.
Yeah.
We don't, like, don't swear, don't steal. Like, I get it. There's some things that are better than others, but I really do think it's either things that are bringing you towards your higher sense of self and things that are moving you away.
That's it. Well, and but, you know, again, it's like that that concept of being able to move away from your higher self. It is true on one, and this is Ram Dass talks about this, all the various levels that we could decide to tune into. So on one level, the level of the identity, if you believe that you are a self and you believe that you're your body and you believe you're all the symbols and memories that you have, and you've really decided, I'm a person, which most of us have decided, I am a fucking person. I have a social security number. When I get burnt, it hurts. I am a body. I know it. Well, You are a body in the same way that a seed is a seed. You are a one, you know, this is a current formation happening in the river of the universe of which you're a part. The rivulet that you happen to be has formed a human existence and has taken on a identity, but that is definitely not what you are. Mm. So that's just part of what you are. So if you tune in...
That would be your mind telling you that you're this. That's your ego.
That's your ego.
Can I, you're going to like this?
Please.
That is my current theory on what the devil is. People talk about the devil. I also never like that. It goes hand in hand with sin. The devil is the deceiver and the liar, right? And the thief.
Yes.
And I was like, that sounds a lot like the egoic mind. He's the one that tells you you're lacking, that you need more money, more women, better car.
Yeah.
He's the one that tells you you don't deserve love. It's your brain. You talk about your God.
Yeah.
You're also the devil.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like you have both inside of you, and both are fine. I'm not talking about a villain and a hero. I'm talking about everything being one thing.
That's it. And that, you know, and all the practices, man, they point in the direction of like, okay, so here we have this thing, the diabolic mind, right? And this will, let's just think of it. It's all thought processes, all desire, it's all thought patterns that could be considered unwholesome, all desires that bring us in the direction of disconnection, all aversions to things that bring us to connection. It's the desire in Buddhism, there's like three primary delusions. One of them is the delusion that there is a self. The second delusion is the delusion that things that are bad are good. And then I can't remember what the third delusion is. So anyway, so here is the mind, right? As Jack Kornfield says, the mind creates thoughts in the way that the mouth salivates. So here you have this thing salivating with all these various thought patterns. And we get to decide which thought pattern we're going to tune into. In the same way, if you're reading comments on whatever thing you have released, you get to decide if you're going to tune into the nice compliments or if you're going to tune into the, I'm sorry about that. You get to decide if you're, fucking, I don't know how to turn the ringer off on my goddamn computer.
No, it makes me laugh.
You can
tune into the good comments or the bad comments.
That's it. You get to pick. So it's like in the same, now here's the question, Pete, and I hope you can answer this for me. Who is tuning in? So if you have the thing you can tune into, your thought patterns, your sensations, everything you see, hear, feel, who is tuning in? Who is tuning in? What is it that's tuning in?
Right, I know, and this is the annoying answer, I think, for people listening, but it is what I think, is that it's the idea that you're a part of consciousness, and consciousness is tuning in. So it's like the radio wave, and you're the radio, so the radio wave is going through the radio, and that becomes your life. but you're not your brain. That's why you can navigate your brain in a certain way. There's that great, I met a monk on the promenade. He gave me the book I can never pronounce correctly, the
Bhagavad Gita.
The Gita. He gave me the Gita. It has a painting inside of it, which is like the horses, and then there's the horses is your brain and your thoughts, and then there's you. Your consciousness is the one like holding the reins.
Yeah.
But then like behind you is actually your essence, is your kind of soul.
That's it.
So yeah, no, I understand that. And all these drugs you've taken have certainly helped you understand that you're a part of a thing. As Deepak Chopra says, you're the eyes of the universe observing itself. It seems to please the universe to witness itself.
Yeah.
Which sounds like, you know, kind of stupid nonsense, but like when you're bored on an airplane or even in this room right now, you're not looking at that computer screen behind you. So I'm the only thing in the universe that's seeing that right now. That'll put some spring in your step when you're like, I'm the only one on this airplane that's looking at this cloud. So right. I am the universe seeing that cloud. I'm making that exist, basically.
You're bringing you're like a lighthouse, and everything it shines upon comes to life.
Right.
Anything that you gaze at in the universe takes on some form, yes.
Yeah, so consciousness is my answer. I don't know if that is that good for you?
Sounds good to me, but but it's this, so it's so, this con, this is the thing that is so fun to contemplate, which is, you know, here I am simultaneously existing as this obviously transient little trickle of self, and I'm simultaneous while I'm playing this part, and man, we are playing the part. I mean, you are fucking, I am playing the part. You're playing.
Yeah.
Nailing it. Oh my God. The next time you get angry, the next time you find yourself in a nice, righteous fucking rage, anger, just like stop for 2 seconds and pretend that you're some kind of method actor and that
you're nailing it.
And you're nailing it. And just look at it, be like, oh God, this is ridiculous. Yeah. I'm nailing this.
Because you're being a person. Yeah. When some of the things, this is an Eckhart Tolle thing, it's like your true self has no interest in that crossword puzzle or that promotion or any of the things or that hamburger.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't really care about that. We've been conditioned to think that those are the things that we want. And that's kind of the dog part of us. Like that's in another way, that's the boobs that keep distracting us, when really our true self is more interested in the walk at that moment.
Yeah, or the boobs. I mean, this is the thing.
I wish it wasn't boobs. If it had been something else.
I love sex. Here,
I know, but if it had been something else, if it had been an Arby's billboard, maybe you'd be like.
This is why, like, here's one of the great things, man. Like, if you ever get to, like, try some, like, supremely kinky sex, like the most kinky sex I recommend it. You gotta do it. Think of the most blasphemous thing you can do. And do it not with the intention of being bad. Do it with the intention of entering into one of the locked doors of of the palace of yourself.
Yeah.
And you go in there and do whatever the thing happens to be, your fetish, your kink, whatever the thing is. And very quickly as it's happening, you realize this is fine. There's nothing evil about it. No darkness here. Nothing has happened.
Right.
Now, I say that within limits. If your kink happens to be doing some awful, truly violent, dark, malicious fucking thing, then we're not talking about the same thing.
Right.
I'm talking about that. Now, here's where, now this is where it gets interesting, right? Here's where it gets interesting. What I just said. Here is the big question that I can't answer. Bhagavad Gita says, even the vilest of criminals, if their mind is absorbed in me, they shall cross beyond the material ocean as easily as a child stepping over the water in a cow's hoof print, something like that. Basically, if your mind is absorbed in the eternal love force of all things and you are a monster, then you will still gain enlightenment, awakening. Yeah. You'll still pass.
Well, that's like Jesus to the criminal on the other cross. When he said, today you'll be with me in paradise.
Right. So, but this is the question. It's a valid question. Everyone has to ask it. Okay, so you're saying that if Jeffrey fucking Dahmer had this ridiculous connection with your sweet transcendent master outside of time and space, you fucking mushroom-chomping, new-age, blathering hippie, you're saying that this murderer would be somehow forgiven, that he's pure, this is perfect? You sound like the fucking Taliban, asshole. Mm. ISIS says the same fucking thing when they blow people up. They're doing it for God. Everything's fine. So the big question is, and the place I haven't been able to answer it yet is, if everything's perfect, what about the goddamn prime minister in the UK or whoever these elites are who are molesting children? Right. What about the fucking genocidal Boko Haram people? How do we reconcile the concept that everything's perfect with the ever-present violence on planet Earth? You have 10 seconds to answer that question.
Well, it seems to me that everything is moving in the direction of reconciliation. We're not saying that Charles Manson is already absorbed in the all-knowing lightness. He's saying if he could be absorbed, then he'll step over like a hoofprint. Mm. Everything is moving, whether it's this lifetime or another time. In time, things are moving towards wholeness.
I can't believe you actually answered it in 10 seconds. You asshole!
Because if you want to talk about something that is very dualism, right? We want to talk about good and evil.
Yeah.
And then your friend Alex Gray changed his name to Gray because he wants no more duality. Like, it's such an unappealing, it's excluding mystery. So when you look at, like, I remember Joseph Campbell talking about this temple that he went in, and there was the face of God, but it was three faces. It was one face looking forward, and it was one face looking to the darkness, and one face looking to the light, but all three were understood to be God. We don't like that. It's not good. Superman doesn't fucking attack children.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It ruins the story.
Yeah.
You know, and that happens all the time. People fall from grace, and people become criminals, and we like going like that person is no longer on the good side, which I understand. I'm a part of the civilization as well.
Yeah.
But the really trippy, the best way to describe it is if you're on drugs, you can have that excuse and be like, well, I was on drugs and I understood that even God is present in the shortcomings as well as the triumphs.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He wasn't asleep when that bad thing happened and woke up when you won the lottery.
Yeah.
Everything belongs. That is a phrase. In fact, that is something I'd love to share with your listeners. I share it with as many people as I can. It's my current mantra. I got from this wonderful Franciscan friar named Richard Rohr, who did my podcast. Just an unbelievable man, really, really great. And we were talking about love, and he said, love is learning to say yes to what is.
Ooh.
I was like, shut the fuck up. So I got a reminder on my phone. It goes off every day that says, say yes to what is.
If I was
a tattoo person, I'd get it on my wrist or something I'd see every day. I just try and say it all the time.
That's
good and bad. You lost the job. Say yes to what is. This is what's happening. I used to have a philosophy that was my own that I used to say, if your girlfriend breaks up with you and breaks your heart, the one way to detach and get perspective of the eternal, or even just to step outside of the moment, is to say, if my life were a TV show, like The Sopranos or Mad Men, the show's following me, my girlfriend breaks up with me and I'm devastated, you can say, good episode.
Whoa,
this is a good episode.
Wow.
Everyone watching my life, which isn't anybody, but if they were watching my life, would go, holy shit.
Great.
Someone broke up with Pete. What's he going to do?
Yeah.
How is he going to move towards wholeness? How
is
he going to roll with this? Because it's all good. We love the bad episodes of TV shows, and we hate it when it happens to us. Unfortunately, this is another thing Richard Rohr said. We don't get to God by doing it right. We get to God by doing it wrong. It's pain.
It's like stand-up.
Exactly. We know this. Why is childbirth so fucking traumatic? You know what I mean? All the good things come through loss. I came to where I am, and it's not even that traumatic, but my wife cheated on me. Then I found out who I was. It's the hero's journey. It's Skywalker's uncle and aunt getting murdered, and then he has to go off and leave his home. It's Jesus leaving his home and then being killed and then rising again. It's the hero's journey over and over. Oedipus, everybody, Odysseus, all those stories, Homer, these things, this idea, we know it is right in front of us, but when it happens to us, we resist it. But we shouldn't. We should say yes to it.
That's
spiritual maturity.
Have I told you that? Forgive me if we've said this on an old podcast, because if we have, it's weird because it means you bring the story out of me. But you know the story of like the. Have you ever heard? So just stop me if I already said it. Or don't stop me.
I won't.
So there's a great story. I can't remember where I read it, damn it. But it's a really good story. And it's a story of there's a beautiful sculpture of a god, right? a beautiful sculpture of a god that everyone's coming to worship and putting flowers on it and butter at its feet. And this is a representation of God.
The god's vegan.
Yeah, they like putting, yeah, the god's vegan. It's vegan butter. It's almond milk or something for this story. Gluten-free bread. They're just bringing gluten-free bread to it every day.
Can you make
day.
The story more L.A. for
yeah,
me?
They're bringing gluten-free bread, yoga mats. They're bringing it like...
Cruelty-free yoga mats. Thank you.
Cruelty-free yoga mats and great coffee, LaMille coffee. And this deity's got the life. And next to it is this kind of broken stone that was part of what was used. And the stone says to the deity, like, how come you get to be a deity? How come you get to be a deity and all this stuff comes to you and I'm sitting here and no one gives a shit about me? Mm. And the statue said to the broken stone, well, I don't know if you remember this or not, but we used to be two rocks sitting next to each other. And when the sculptor came to you because you were such a perfect rock to carve and started chipping away at you, you started screaming at the top of your lungs and begged the sculptor to stop. And so he did, because he had mercy on you. And then he went on and carved me. So, you know, that's the idea. Yeah. Exactly what you're saying, that these moments of loss or this disaster.
Until you get to... sorry.
No, please.
Until you get... I think you can get to a point. I'm not gonna ever say that bad things will stop happening to certain people. But you get to a point where maybe there's other ways for God or whatever we want to call it to get your attention other than fucking your shit up.
Let's hope.
That is something that I kind of like. Maybe it's superstitious, but I hold out. I'm like, maybe there are other ways of learning. But, I mean, pain does seem to be the best way to get our attention.
Neem Karoli Baba, he said, I pray for pain. Because when pain comes, it's this packet of information. It's a teaching, and they begin to recognize it's a teaching. Which is why it's like when your wife cheats on you, when your friend betrays you, when your job gets lost. Every single one of those moments, you have been given this incredible diving board.
It's not a test.
No.
God isn't testing
you. It's a chance for acrobatics. It's a chance to show off.
Such a better way to put it.
Yeah.
When bad shit happened to us, we said, God is testing our faith. He wants to see if I can still be chipper in the motherfucking lobby of church. Can I still give firm handshakes and goofy, hey, buddy, to my fucking neighbor? Fuck that shit. Just be after my wife leaves. Fuck that. Do a backflip, motherfucker. Yeah.
These are the backflips. These are the backflips. This is Nelson Mandela leaving prison, shaking hands with his captors.
Right.
This is every time you hear about somebody giving up their life to save somebody else's life.
Right.
That's what it is, man. It's like when you don't want these moments.
Right.
But when they come, as they definitely will. Instead of being like, oh, fuck, shit, god damn it fucking happened. You're like, oh, you've come at last. Watch this.
It's funny. You made me think of my Pete Rollins. Pete Rollins did my podcast. He's a philosopher. He's very, very smart, very, very funny, very cool. He told me that, I forget the quote, if I were smarter or if I had a better memory in this moment, I could remember who it was. But he says, when we say to the poet, give us another song, what you're really saying is, like, may more hardship befall you. May your heart be broken again, because it delights us the way you twist the words and stuff. So it's actually a very cruel thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, is give us another poem.
Yeah. Hey, Elliot, when are you going to come out with another album, Mr. Smith? Well, you know, it's going to be at least a year of hardcore suffering.
And then it seemed to have eaten him.
it did get him, but it doesn't have to get you. And it's like, man, there's a documentary on Netflix about K2. I'm sorry, I've mentioned this before because it's in my head, but you know, people spend a lot of fucking money to get a chance to climb those mountains. Like, not everybody gets the chance to climb those mountains, and these people are paying tons of dough to do a thing where if somebody came to you right now, it's like, hey, Pete, we're flying to K2 tomorrow, and you're going to have to fucking climb it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily be on top of the world. It's like, not because you don't know how to climb. Not yet.
No, I'm kidding. But, you know, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't want to do it.
But the big moments, death of a parent, disease of the self, loss of a loved one, brokenheartedness, these truly are the diving boards that are placed into our life by the universe. And just like a diving board, you can either do tricks that make the audience and the people around you go, oh, holy shit, right. How did you do that? Or right. You can get on World Star Hip Hop doing a stupid belly flop, you know? That's the thing.
Well, there is the other approach to...
I don't know why World Star would show belly flop, because usually they're showing people beat the shit out of each other on buses, but you know what I'm saying.
I'm thinking about people that I know, that I love, that have bad things happen to them, and you can see it calcify them and slow them down. I'm not saying those are weak people, but at all. I just feel like that is one of the responses, is that we can, like, take it personal. Going back to the dog. I got a dog. He started peeing everywhere in the house. He's a boy, and they mark. He's a rescue. He's nervous. He's fucking flipping out. Peed in every room of the house at one point.
Yes.
And that was one of the... I didn't think I would learn this spiritual lesson from my dog, but I learned this one instead, was the idea, like, don't take it personally.
Right.
Like, why are you taking it? That seems like a DMT message. It's like, don't take it personally.
Brother, I'm going to give you this Ram Dass story. It's very quick. Ram Dass talks about it all the time.
Rami D.
He says that it's like a oarsman rowing a boat in the fog, and he bumps into another boat bumps into him, and he gets so mad, and he's like, screams at the boat, and then the fog clears, and nobody's in it. It was an empty boat. Mm. And so in the same way, it's like this personalization, making people responsible for what they do. When you make a person responsible for the evil that they've done to you, you are falling prey to one of the great myths of our time, which is that we are only one personality. When the reality is most people are thousands of different people encapsulated in one being. So the person, when they do you wrong, it wasn't the person that did you wrong. It was one component of their self.
And you can either see that as a sacred mirror, Alex Gray again. You can see a person as a sacred mirror and learn something from that affront or that offense. Or you can choose to get mad at the container. Instead of, like, what happens to be inside of it in that moment. But that's the big Buddha thing, and that's another Deepak thing. I'm sure he got it from him as well, is that idea that, like, we're all different things. I think it's so weird when we're like, I wanted to write this bit about, like, I want a girlfriend. Well, which you wants a girlfriend?
Right.
When my friend is like, I want a girlfriend. One of my friends is like, I'm lonely. I want a girlfriend. I'm like, which you? And what kind of girlfriend would you like? Because Horny Pete wants the biggest tits and the hugest ass and, you know what I mean? And, like, just a complete freak. And then like, Lonely Pete wants, like, an intellectual that's going to read to him and all this. Stuff. There's all these different yous. You need the thing. You need the partner. You need the friends that are going to go along with you as you're shifting from moment to moment. The Pete that came in to the beginning of this podcast, well, he's gone. He's already dead. He was a different guy. You've already changed my life. And I don't mean like, you've saved me. I just mean this conversation has changed me. My outlook, my frequency is different.
Yeah.
People listening. Music, an amazing... I watch a Wes Anderson film. I always feel like I took a small amount of mushrooms.
Sure.
Suddenly everything just looks interesting and nuanced.
Yes.
I mean? So anyway... It kind of goes back to what you were saying about, like, there's so many different things, so many different chemical combinations of who we are and who we could be inside of us, that it is kind of our job, or you can take it on as your job, to, like, try and navigate towards the higher ones.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, that is a good thing that Jack Kornfield taught me. In any given moment, ask yourself, if you can remember, what is my highest intention here? So when you find yourself in a argument, or you find yourself in a place where you might be on defense or trying to, like, protect yourself in a cruel way, you can, if you just stop for 2 seconds, be like, okay, I know that this is what I'm doing right now. The game I'm playing is, like, I'm trying to do, like, a Lannister move on a person who did something to me, Game of Thrones level vengeance. Mm. But you could, in the midst of that, you could be like, but what if I wasn't, like, trying to hurt somebody really bad right now? What would my highest intention be in this moment? Or, like Viktor Frankl says, pretend you're on your deathbed and you've been given the chance to live your whole life over again as though you didn't make any mistakes. It's like the next time you get in a fight, or the next time you get in one of those inevitable conflicts, or the next time you can say to yourself, I was just on my deathbed. Mm. And a spirit came to me and said, hey, guess what? We're going to go back and do the whole thing perfectly. What would I do in this moment? now?
Yeah.
What would I do in this moment now?
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool because quite often what you wouldn't do is be like, you fucking cunt, why'd you lie to me, you bitch?
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh God, I love you. I don't fucking care. You're beautiful. You're wonderful.
Right. Like the dog that just peed in on your floor.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And you don't need shitty moments for that. That's the other thing. You could do that right now. Like, you can do that. That's the other thing. You don't need, like, a fucking warrior to fling the decapitated head of your mother into your goddamn tent. And you go, I forgive you.
Right.
You can do it right now, at this very second, by yourself. You can ask yourself, what's my highest intention here in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
Here I am in this moment. The Great Spirit has sent me back through time to relive my life. What am I going to do?
Mm.
And I guarantee that if you got sent back from your deathbed.
I think about this all the time. It's like the movie 18 again. Remember that movie? Then they did, they did 19 again, I think. But I remember thinking about that as a kid, that idea that you can go back and what would you do? I think about this all the time. So, you know, comedian, I'm not saying I'm famous or anything, but if somebody else, if we had a lottery and you're like, your spirit can take my body and my identity for 24 hours, what would you do with it? And it's not stay at home and rewatch an episode of Mad Men for the 15th
time. Nope.
You're going to go out and you're going to use the access, the friends, the even, you could say, the money that I have to go and do something amazing. Like, it's not about money. Maybe I shouldn't have thrown in money there, but I'm just saying, like, I could tweet, I am going to Ye Rustic Inn, and I'm going to buy everybody's drinks, and I just want to have a party right now.
Yes.
Please just come. I just want it to be a love fest. No gimmicks, no nothing. Just like-minded people, let's have a party right now. Could do that. And if I really owned the idea that this is the only moment, the problem with this kind of style is that it is a little bit exhausting. At a certain point, you're going to run out of steam. But, you know, it is that idea that, like, what would you do with your life if you were owning? Buddha says that the mistake we make is thinking that we have time. I think that's a Buddha quote.
Oh, right. Well,
I'll do it later.
Yeah, do it later. But it's just like, shit, man. Imagine, here's a crazy idea. Like, imagine if all of a sudden you blinked and you're sitting in the celestial palace of the most beautiful, loving, incredible, super intelligent being. And the being said to you, hey, I love you so much that you're never going to understand how much I love you. And I know you're having a rough time down there in the simulator that you're currently training in. So I'm taking you out for a second because I just want to remind you, this is just part of the training program. It's part of you being my servant, and this is how we train. I love you so, so much. And you really had that experience. Now I'm going to send you back in the simulator, and you're only going to be there for, you know, maybe 20, 30 more years, depending on however long. And it's going to go by in a blink of an eye, I promise. I promise. And then you're going to be back here with me again, and we're going to hang out, and you're going to, you can
right.
stay.
And you'll know me better because of it.
Yeah. When you came back to Earth from that quick moment, you're not going to yell at people anymore because you know you're in a simulation, and you know that's all part of a school and it's an academy, and you know that your real job is working for this incredible, beautiful love force. And then probably you're going to spend the rest of your life, whenever you see someone suffering, doing the exact same thing to them that guy did to you in your own way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea.
Yeah. Fucking A.
You're the best, Pete Holmes.
No way, man. Tell me more about your DMT before you wrap it up, if that's what you were about to do. I just want to hear what happened. You took it. Were you here? Because here's my question. You're drunk. Your body is drunk. You take the spirit molecule.
Yes.
Were you drunk in that realm?
Not at all.
See, that's interesting.
No, for me, man, it's always like you come home like a kid who's been playing in the mud and got mud on his clothes and is expecting mommy to be angry. And mommy is always like, I love you. We'll wash your clothes.
Well, what happened on that trip specifically?
Well, it was lately, thank God, my experience has changed drastically from when I used to. Like, there was a time when I would take psychedelics. And I think maybe it's because I rarely take psychedelics, at least not as much as I used to. And when I do it, except for that story I told you, I try to adhere to the things that I've learned from people on this podcast as far as responsible ways to do it.
Adding a little ceremony.
Yeah, intention behind it, enough time where I'm like, have, you know, take three days. If you're going to do a psychedelic, you take 3 days off, do it on the second day.
Did I tell you that?
It's from the Psychedelic Experience is the name of the book, which is the...
That's my big thing.
Oh, well, you...
One day to unwind, because I always do it at another location. So let's say you go to Big Bear. First day is just arriving. You don't want to do it the day you arrive.
Yep.
You get used to it in your environment. You do it on the second day. But you need to, while you're tripping, know that the next day, for me, the type of brain I have, I need to know that even the next day is completely wide open.
That's how we do it.
Empty your pockets, too. I don't want a cell phone of somebody I don't remember being.
Keep that fucking phone off, man. Keep the phone off. But, you know, if something springs up and some weirdness happens, if you've been studying any of this stuff at all, then you can work with it in ways that maybe you weren't able to work with it before. Mm-hmm. So, for me, these experiences, when they happen, have been incredibly positive and have been incredibly useful in a certain way, especially with the work I have, if you want to call it work, with the stuff I do, it helps a lot. So
it's just play.
Yeah.
That's a Deepak quote.
Yeah.
I asked him, I was like, how can you be so mystical, but you're so successful? You have like a Disneyland for mystical people. Millions and millions of dollars. And he goes, it's just play.
You're allowed to be successful. That's very important for people to realize. You're allowed to be successful. And it's unfortunate that the idea, that the notion that if you're successful, you're somehow tainted.
Right.
That's just the equal form of idolatry as thinking.
Well, that's what Richard Rohr said. He said, attached people. He's like, I've seen rich people that are very detached, and I've seen homeless people that are very attached, that they're like very materialistic.
Yeah.
And then rich people that are very like, none of this means anything. So it's a mind state for sure.
So to answer your question, the experience is generally for me fairly similar. And there's an expansion that's kind of, and this happens with most psychedelics. For me now, there's a kind of, I'm going to call it such a weird term for it, but there's a kind of inflation or ballooning out of the, it feels like I'm in a very expansive space, like incredibly expansive, like a pure field of, I don't know, it's.
So you don't go into darkness?
Well, no, there is darkness, because darkness is kind of beautiful, but it's more of a kind of like matrix of geometric patterns and a feeling of the same feeling you get when you're standing on a plane or something. And it's like, look at all this space, you know, that, and then trepidation prior to consuming it, like definite pure fear, trepidation, and then immediately... following the trepidation, there is a sense of, what are you afraid of? This is great. Mm. But instead of me being like, what were you afraid of? It's everything going, what are you afraid of? This is awesome. There's a playfulness to it. It does not feel heavy, serious. It does not feel judgmental. It doesn't feel anything more than this very childlike, happy, playful energy that seems to want nothing more than for all human beings to stop being so hard on themselves, to stop being so brutally, brutally hard on themselves. All these things that people are doing that they're killing themselves on a daily basis for, waking up with a heavy heart, going to bed in tears, all of these things, you've done nothing wrong. In fact, everything you're doing is perfect, and I love you, and I wanted you to really enjoy this place. Mm. It's that message, but it's done in such a quick way that when it's over, you're like, oh, what did I just dream? I had some kind of very strange dream. And you can't quite remember it, but you can remember it, because I just said it, and that seems to be the message. And, of course, it's not just coming from DMT. It's coming because the DMT is molecularly unlocked a door in the depths of your subconscious that connects you to everything, and in that quick moment everything says hi.
That's good, man. You should, Shane Moss did my podcast.
I gotta have him on this, yeah.
Told DMT stories for an hour, and it was amazing.
I know he's got some wild ones, man. I've heard.
Really good ones. Really, really good.
Pete, I love you.
I love you too, man.
You're so cool, man. I wish we would hang out more, man.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
My girl's out of town for a couple weeks. Let's hang out. I mean, let's go to the French restaurant.
Let's do it.
No fooling.
Let's do it this week sometime.
And people that like conversations like this, please join me and Rob Bell, who is a fascinating, with us, on our side kind of guy. And the tour dates are on PeteHolmes.com.
When is the tour, though?
It starts on the 15th, I think, is the first date.
Of this month?
Yeah.
When does it end?
It'll be going for a while.
What's a while?
Through May. There's dates through May, I think. Yeah, the 15th is the first one. In Boulder, Colorado. Then we're going to Salt Lake City, Seattle, Portland, Boston, Florida.
Boston?
I don't know. May?
Okay. Well, that stinks. Just because I'm going to be out that way. Man, just because...
We'll do another one in L.A.
I've got a... man, somehow it slipped my mind that you were such an Alex Gray fan. I had no idea.
I just became an Alex Gray fan. I watched the movie Cosm on Netflix, and I loved it. And then for my birthday, which was March 30th, my girlfriend wonderfully gave me his book. There's like a big old book of his paintings.
Yeah.
Then I kind of looked at it, right? And I loved it. Then I go to the Guggenheim in New York. This is a couple weeks ago. And I saw him there. And I didn't say anything to him. But it reminded me to read that book. And I'm really glad I didn't say anything to him. Because I wasn't, this is going to sound lofty, but I wasn't ready to talk to him. I didn't know who I would have been talking to.
He is a sweetie.
I know
he's
a sweetie.
He's a genius. Now, I don't know what you're doing, man. I'm just throwing this out there.
Yeah, hit it.
April 26th. In Brooklyn, Alex Gray and Allison Gray are going to be on my podcast with Emil. You're invited to that.
Oh, that's so nice.
But also, afterwards, we're doing a huge party fundraiser for Cosm afterwards. So, man, if you want to come out and just, have a crazy night, I know it's a long flight, you're totally invited. I'd love to see you there. And this would be a great podcast with the Grays. I'm just going to let it float around in your brain.
I'm in Austin on the 25th. So
shit.
No, but then it's the 26th, you said.
It's the 26th. Just think about it, man. Think about it. If you were on your deathbed, what would you do? That's awful. That's pure manipulation. Stay in Austin. Don't fly to New York. We'll get together again sometime. Pete,
we'll figure it out.
Guys, go see this tour. Pete is incredible. That sounds like an... I can't wait to hear about
it. I just want to do more things. And I think we're all moving in that way where I was like, I want to do something that's funny but also allows for these types of conversations.
Yeah.
Because that's all I want to do. In fact, my stand-up is getting more and more infused with this subtle hum of a worldview that I like to share.
Everything's moving in this direction, man. And you're allowed to move in this direction. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. All these old stinky, old crusty...
Vampires.
Vamps are going to tell you, you can't do that. No, you can do whatever you want. And... don't forget to, I'm sure you're already doing it, but question and answers after.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of the live podcast I do is getting the conversation going with the audience.
That's interesting.
So fun, man. And it really is. Cause the essence of all this that we're doing is it's not one-sided. We're talking about the gestalt, taking everyone's biocomputer, merging it together into one supercomputer and seeing what the output is every single night. And that output is amazing. And some of the questions you get from people who come, man, it'll be your favorite part of the show.
We're going to do it. We did it in LA. We'll do it again.
Love it. Thank you, Pete. Go see that and go see his shows, all of them. Thank you, Pete. Listen to his podcast. I'll have all the links at DuncanTrussell.com. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Pete Holmes. Go see him on tour. Check out his website at PeteHolmes.com. Thank you, Squarespace.com, for sponsoring this episode. Go to Squarespace. Use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first purchase. Don't forget to go through our Amazon portal. And for God's sake, just for one second, pretend the entire universe is trying to love you and give it love back. You'll fail, but it's a fun practice. I love you guys. I'll see you next time. Have a great week. See you later.